Lecture 32, Joy and Terror, Society and Culture in the 1930s.
In this lecture, we look at a period of Soviet history that may well be among the most enigmatic, of the Stalinist 1930s. Scholars have argued passionately in recent years over the meaning of this period in Soviet life. For these were years in many ways in which the Stalinist political and social and cultural order really was most fully developed. It's sometimes described as high Stalinism. As in debates about the first five-year plan, some scholars have insisted on the fundamentally totalitarian nature of the Stalinist 1930s. They focus on the use of absolute dictatorial power, on indoctrination, on terror, in which most ordinary people were seen as only victims. Other scholars, often described as revisionists, argue that the Stalinist system couldn't possibly rule only through coercion and terror. And they point out the way in which the regime found support in the population for many of its policies, that it had its loyalists, even true believers, and certainly many beneficiaries, that in many ways the system was responsive to people's desires and even their values. And this explains its strength and survival alongside coercion and even terror. Now, as a matter of interpretation about the meaning of these years, I'll leave this to you to make your own judgment on how to balance terror and force, and on the other hand, social responsiveness in the system. But I will emphasize the one inescapable fact. It is clear that there is plentiful evidence for both sides of this argument in every aspect of Stalin's 1930s. Plenty of terror and force and coercion, not to mention subtler forms of cultural and psychological control, and a great deal of support and enthusiasm, and even, I would say, a good deal of ordinary, everyday happiness. And this contradictory picture is the subject of this lecture. First, it's clear that in many ways the 1930s was indeed a time of overwhelming authoritarian power, indeed what is best called tyranny. In numerous ways, the state and party, which were essentially one, sought control of every aspect of life. This was in many ways a regime that tried to create a totalitarian society and went a long way toward doing so. A cultural iron curtain, as it would later be called, surrounded the country. It became almost impossible in the 1930s to travel abroad. Censorship was intense, not only limiting what could be said, which was just about anything critical of the state or any alternative ideas, but also forbidding the import of most books and periodicals from other parts of the world. In fact, even older books that held contrary views existing in Russian libraries, in Soviet libraries, were separated out from the main collection and put in separate locked collections. Russian culture was made more uniform than it had really ever before been in Russian history. The freedom, the relative freedom and diversity that one found, for example, in the press and discussions of ideas and in art and literature during the 1920s, a period that saw all sorts of creative experiments in writing and in artistic creation and in sculpture, many of which continued the avant-garde traditions of the early revolutionary and pre-revolutionary years. All of this was essentially ended in the 1930s. Uniformity, ideological orthodoxy became the rule. And this orthodoxy became, in many ways, quite conservative. All forms of creative, avant-garde experimentalism was abandoned. Art and literature, in many ways, were to follow realistic, accessible traditions of the past. And most importantly, to be positive, to be optimistic, to have no doubt, to suggest no complexity about the building of socialism. It was to be a heroic art and literature and world of ideas, all called officially socialist realism, was to be the dominant form in art and literature. In everyday social and cultural life, experimentation such as we saw earlier in the 20s and certainly even in the first five-year plan period was discouraged in the 1930s.